Oh, Stephen, it's so early. Why did you have to get me up at 5 in the morning?
Do your parents know where you are?
They do not, actually. These days, my parents rarely know where I am.
Well, you're on an old church bus with some coworkers.
And some random churchgoers.
Yes. Well, it's a church bus that we bought, and we couldn't take the name off the side of it, so it's a little confusing.
It's where we podcast now, actually.
Yes.
We drive around in a church bus, and we podcast from that. Yep. Let's get to this episode. We are talking about the episode Broke, which originally aired on April 23rd, 2009. This is the final episode, I think, of the Michael Scott Paper Company saga.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next episode, we kind of see the integration of Michael Scott Paper Company back into Dunder Mifflin. But yeah, this is sort of the last of this story arc. And a couple facts about this episode that I think are cool. It's the first episode directed by Steve Carell. That's special. All right, it's cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I love you coming here with the facts. This is amazing.
It was actually his first thing he ever directed. And I think it's a fantastic episode. As did the readers of Office Tally, you know, an office blog that was very popular as episodes came out. And this is the highest rated episode from this season with a rating of 9.17 out of 10. And you know what? I don't know if it's my favorite. I think maybe we talk about that at the end of the season, which is coming up. There's only 3 more episodes in the season. But I love this episode. It is so good. All of it is perfect.
It is a really great episode, and I always forget that this isn't 2 episodes because we have the whole bus scene in the morning and we're seeing them delivering the paper and actually the fruits of their labor almost in the beginning of this episode. And then we see the whole transition of them getting reabsorbed into Dunder Mifflin. And mm-hmm. So like this is one of those episodes that you're like, wow, I kind of wish that there was more time dedicated to this. But at the same time, it moves so fluidly and so well that you get all roped into the whole thing. It's great.
Yeah, I thought when I sat down to watch it this morning, I thought it was like a supersized episode, like maybe it was 40 minutes or something. So I sat down earlier than I normally do. I was like, oh, it's a regular, like, how is this a regular length episode? But it is, they cram a lot of stuff in, and I say we start going through it.
So it starts with the open of Michael early in the morning, so early that it is dark, and he is out in front of their van, which they are apparently doing all of their own deliveries, and it's the 3 of them all doing it together.
It's 4:30 in the morning. Do you know where your kids are? If you are Ryan's parents or Pam's parents or my parents, you do. They're going to be in this van with me. Who am I? Nothing to fear. I am just a 44-year-old guy with a paper route.
Which seems like maybe not super necessary until you realize that they're also loading and unloading boxes out of the van because there's no delivery person. That comes up later. And we see Michael making the rounds. Michael's a morning person. It seems like he's excited. He's ready to go. He's pranking Ryan. He's yelling at Jim. Early morning Michael is good.
Michael has a really funny morning beverage that we find out about almost accidentally as Pam does, and she asks for coffee in the van, and I do love that gag where he hands it, he's like, cream and sugar, hands it to her, and it is literally just cream and sugar.
Ugh.
You didn't happen to bring any coffee, did you, Michael?
Milk and sugar.
Oh, awesome, you're a lifesaver. Wait, is this just milk and sugar?
That's what I said.
Do you drink this every day?
Every morning.
Every morning.
Well, there's like this running joke in the office that Michael has bad teeth. He like goes to the dentist very frequently. At some point, he like says like, "Oh yeah, it's like my monthly cleaning or something." So this is why, because he's dissolving his teeth every morning with milk and sugar. But you got to let the man make his own life choices, I guess.
I do also, as I mentioned earlier, I love the running gag of people entering the van and mm-hmm. trying to get onto the van because and not being able to communicate that because of the language barrier that this is creating. And I think that that's kind of funny that it comes up, it just pops up, and Pam has to deal with another thing that's in the way of them delivering paper.
Excuse me. Sorry. No, it's a paper company now. It's not for the church.
Poor Pam. This is the episode where Pam's her realization of what's going to happen like comes raining down on her, and I like the way she handles it. But we'll get to that too. So yeah, we see them making deliveries, And then we see them back in their little itty bitty office. And Ryan's like, look, we should look into a delivery guy. Like, we need somebody to do this for us. It's killing us. They're all really tired. And Michael counters this like, well, what if we just have a nicer office? Like, we'll build a loft. Pam will love that because she's an artist. And kind of puts it off, but also realizes that, yeah, this would maybe be a good thing.
Michael looks for a place to nap before he looks for extra help. But I think he is also kind of more aware than anybody else just how little money that they have. And so that's probably why he's putting things off. So they eventually decide to go seek the advice of an accountant and figure out what their company can and can't afford. And this is where they get kind of this horrible news that things aren't going so well. And we find out that Ryan messed up another company with his poor business ideas, and that he thought he knew it all. He ran the numbers. He was the one crunching the numbers and said it was going to be fine, but he was doing it in the wrong way. And it turns out they are just overspending and they cannot be viable for much longer.
Yeah, it turns out they're charging way too little. And as they sell more, they will lose more money. Yeah, I like the callback to Ryan's failure here. There's another big one coming in this episode, but he's like, oh no, I ran it. And then the CPA asks like what should be a pretty basic question to somebody who would be able to build a business model. He's like, oh, explain what you think that is.
Well, yeah, with a fixed cost pricing model, that's correct.
But, yeah.
But you need to use a variable cost pricing model.
Okay, sure. Right. So why don't you explain what that is to this so they can understand? Yeah, just explain what that is.
Explain what you think that is.
Okay.
Just explain that.
I do love how he turns that around. It's so good. He does not want to admit he is wrong, no matter what. And I do appreciate kind of the, oh, I don't know, like the droopy dog attitude of the CPA and how he's just like, no, this is just how it is. And they're trying to ask him, crunch the numbers again. And he just pushes the button on the keyboard and goes, crunch.
I would like you to crunch those numbers again.
It's a program. There's no such thing.
Just crunch them. Just crunch them, please.
Crunch.
Did it help?
They go back to their office pretty beaten down by this news, and they feel like failures. And it's been quite a roller coaster for this little company. They have had some really high highs and some really low lows, and they're trying their best. And it's exciting that they're stealing all of this business away from Dunder Mifflin. But in the long run, it's exactly what's putting them out of business.
Right. And it's so heartbreaking because they are on that high of, we have a lot of customers, we're delivering paper, like things are working. And just to have that rug ripped out from under them. Like, they're driving back and another Korean woman tries to get on the church van, and they just let her. Like, Pam just opens the door and lets her in. We find out later she stays on the van the whole episode because we see her at the very end. It's like she's just hanging out in there. But yeah, they're totally dejected, and they are sort of this nice moment, right? They're all talking on the floor, and Pam kind of shares that she had tried to find a second job at like Walmart or Target. No one called her back for an interview. And then Michael, kind of listens to that. But then Ryan really shares some big news.
I never went to Thailand.
Really?
I went to Fort Lauderdale.
Was it nice?
Yeah, it was amazing. There's a great pad thai place, though.
I love pad thai.
You never had pad thai?
No. There's a lot I haven't done.
This whole bonding moment is so sweet. I think it really brings them together because they're all sharing their failures. Michael has the failure of the big company. As you said, Pam has the failure of not being able to find a second job. And then Ryan, who we did not expect at all to reveal any kind of flaw in himself, he ends up telling them he didn't actually go to Thailand. He went to Fort Lauderdale instead.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Michael's like, was it nice? I mean, no offense to Fort Lauderdale, but it's not Thailand. Yeah, I really like that bonding moment showing them together because they are in this, right? And they kind of stick together through the rest of the episode into next episode where it sort of causes some friction with Dunder Mifflin. But they are, at the same time that they're doing this, you know, Pam goes to Jim and says, look, we're done. Like, we have like a month to go. The business is going to be over. She talks to the camera and says, like, it's like, you know, a kid trying to drive a car, and she's like the 30-year-old woman saying, yeah, kid, drive, you know, doesn't step in, doesn't realize what's going on. So she feels, I think she feels like she's made a mistake and doesn't really know what to do with it at this point.
Yeah. And they're also about to run out of cheese balls.
Yes.
Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Ryan's at the very, very bottom. There's like five left. His whole arm is in that tub.
Yeah, but he's like emotionally eating, right? He's just trying to feel better.
So after the reveal happens, what's going on, the reveal that they are broke, and Jim, he is so supportive. You know, he talks to Pam again and says, it's going to be okay. We will figure it out. Just the same way he reacted to her leaving Dunder Mifflin in the first mm-hmm. place. Like, you do what you need to do. It's also the same way he reacted to her wanting to go to art school. Like, we will figure this out. We're a team. We'll get through it. It's just so nice to see this relationship and the way it has, because like, there's no more tension and drama between Jim and Pam as there was before when we were waiting for them to get together. And now we just get to see the support side of their relationship. And it's actually really nice, because I think a lot of sitcoms don't give you that. You know, the series, they end on the, oh, yay, the main characters, they get together.
Right.
And this one doesn't. It keeps going because there's more people involved and we have more characters to explore. So we're just letting this relationship be a healthy, thriving relationship. And that's great to see, because not every moment needs to have high drama.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that about this.
Me too. And we also see Jim really deftly managing this situation. And we can talk about the meetings in a second, but he has this information and he tries to navigate these two companies together, and really does it in a way that, like, he pulls it off really well. Like, he sees the situation, he knows what he needs to do. And I like seeing that side of Jim. We see a lot more of that as the series goes on, where eventually he starts a business and does all these things. But I like when we see Jim like really handle the players on the field and move things in a way that is good for everybody.
He looks out for Pam a little bit more in all of the negotiations,
sure.
Which I think is great. But he does it in a way that it isn't super harmful to anybody. So I enjoy that. But so let's get into back at the office. We do see a lot more kind of in the office moment right now, because we start off basically after the cold open. Well, it's not even a cold open, our lukewarm open. Basically after the open, it is it's right to Charles back in the office, and he is explaining how they're losing so many clients. They've already lost 10 major clients to the mm-hmm. Michael Scott Paper Company, and he's kind of demanding action from everybody, and they're looking at him pretty blankly with, I don't know what we can do if what that we're losing them for is for price cutting, you know, like that we can't meet their low prices. So how are we supposed to keep these clients? And
right.
Charles offers no help whatsoever. He's like, just work harder. And everyone's like, I don't know what to do.
We have lost 10 major clients to Michael Scott.
What are we supposed to do? They keep undercutting us on price.
I don't want to hear excuses. I want to see improvements. This is unacceptable.
There's also this great little interaction where Andy's like, hey, I'm the newest. Maybe you should go easier on me. And Charles is like, do you really want to bring that to my attention? And Andy tries to walk it back, but then says, I just think it's important for you to know that, even though I didn't want to say that.
Hey, boss, I'd just like to point out that I have been here less time than these guys.
Why are you telling me this?
I just think the bar should be lower for a newbie.
Is this something you really want to have said?
I don't want to have said that. But I think it's important that you know it.
So Charles offers basically no management or no help in getting any of these clients back and mm-hmm. asking for cutting costs. And eventually we have David Wallace showing up, which feels like a pretty big surprise.
I think it is. And I think it shows the seriousness of the situation Dunder Mifflin finds itself in with the Michael Scott Paper Company. We also see a very different side of Charles, where he's very strict and buttoned up very tight with the people in the office. When David Wallace comes in, he's sucking up, right? He's like, hey, there he is. How's the drive? You know, don't worry about little old me. Like, it's a really noticeable shift in Charles's demeanor and attitude. And we see Jim comment on that by just making kissing sounds to the camera, which happens in the break room. Like, he's in front of the snack machines, which we very rarely see, like, confessionals or talking heads in there. And I wonder if it was so Jim could, like, be way out of the way. Like, he doesn't want them to see. He doesn't want Charles and David to see his comment about it. But it's really interesting how quickly Charles changes here.
Yeah, I think the reason for the location shift is because Charles set up a meeting in the conference room.
Oh, yeah.
So he probably was like, you can't do it. And I love those little details like that. It's like they purposely put a confessional in another room because otherwise the audience would be like, wait, they are in the conference room. So how can that confessional have happened there? Like, it actually makes sense if you're thinking about the crew filming and where they need to be right in the office. I love those little tiny details. And I didn't even notice that the confessional was in a different place until you just said it now. And that's awesome. So yeah, we have a totally different Charles. And I think Jim gets a little bit of his confidence back seeing the weak side of Charles. Mm-hmm. And I think that now he knows, like, okay, David Wallace is here. David Wallace has faith in me. We have a good relationship. He's seen, you know, a promise, or he has given him leadership roles in the past. So we are seeing a Jim that is not beat down. He's going to get the upper hand of Charles in this moment. And what really shows this is that when Charles is kind of picking his number two to come into the meeting, and David is picking his number two, and there's kind of this little battle between having Dwight in and having Jim in, and Charles still is grasping at that power struggle and says, come on in, Dwight, and also Jim. Yeah. It's like they've picked their teams. They are both kind of similarly dressed, which is really funny to see the two sides of the table. And we kind of see Dwight's true color shining through, or mm-hmm. his true, I don't know.
His Dwightness, you know?
His Dwightness.
Yeah, David even makes a comment to Charles when he's like, when Charles says, I want Dwight here.
You know, David, Dwight's been my guy, okay? Yeah, Jim.
Really, I find that extraordinarily surprising.
Oh, he shows promise. And Jim, I don't know, he's been a disappointment.
We'll bring them both.
Okay, great. Dwight, come on in. Also, Jim.
Because this is the same season where we opened the season with Dwight cutting the face off a CPR dummy or having to go to David Wallace's office. So David knows what's going on with the staff way more than Charles does. But yeah, they go into this meeting and, like you said, the Dwightness comes out. He just suggests pranks with bees.
I say we fill Michael's office with bees. My apiarist owes me a favor. There is a hive of bees outside the front door. We kidnap the queen, extract her alarm pheromones, place them on a flushable wipe, and put that in his bathroom.
Which is a really nice detail because way, way later in the series, we see that beehive again, and like Dwight's handyman attacks it with a baseball bat or something and gets stung a bunch. So I like that, the little detail about what's outside. But Charles is very clearly realizing that Dwight is reflecting poorly on him. And he kind of tells Dwight that a little bit later, like, hey, you're embarrassing me. Keep your mouth shut. And it's kind of all unraveling for Charles there in the conference room.
Yeah, Jim finally sees Dwight falling back into his old ways and making his old suggestions. And Jim sees that moment to exploit that weakness in Dwight. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, this is what I've been waiting for, because I feel like since Charles has gotten here, Dwight hasn't let himself kind of run away with things very much in front of anybody, or really, because we haven't seen pranks between Jim and Dwight that off, like, at all. The last prank we saw was a Jim Andy prank, lesson prank, but we haven't seen that anymore. Since Michael's been gone, there's been no ridiculous Dwight moments for Jim to prank on. And mm-hmm. finally, it has arrived. He brings up those bees, and Jim is like, he just latches right onto that and exploits it to a point of making Dwight look foolish, because Jim knows exactly the type of buttons to press when it comes to Dwight. It is so much like they are brothers, like they're family. He knows exactly what to do to get him talking about what he wants him to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. So they're going back and forth about what they could do about this. And eventually David says, you know, I think the best way to do this is to make them an offer. And Charles is like, yes, I was going to say that. And that's where we see Jim come in. He's like, well, you didn't say it. And it's very quiet and subtle.
Yes, I was going to say the same thing. We should buy him out.
Oh, they didn't.
But we do see Jim gaining the upper hand. And this kind of sets off a bunch of negotiations where Jim, knowing this information that Pam has told him, he's keeping it to himself. He's sent down to talk to Michael Scott Paper Company. And he's like, look, they want to buy you out. You got to keep your mouth shut about being almost out of business. And Pam and Ryan, like, really hound Michael on that. They really want this house of cards to stay standing until the negotiations are done.
I do love the way that Jim does it, too. He doesn't directly spell it out for them. He just keeps on being like, I am here to know as little as possible. Don't tell me about your super successful company. Mm-hmm. He starts using the overly articulated, extra loud voice in order to do it, because if he spelt it out too much, that would feel a little devious.
Yeah.
Whereas here, he's nudging some friends in the right direction to make their own decisions. And Pam and Ryan pick up on it. Michael also picks up on it, but he takes an extra minute. But they eventually get there. And I do love the honesty when they are riding up in the elevator and they're both, you know, they're all the three of them, the Michael Scott Paper Company, are trying to convince themselves, like, okay, we are not going to say these things.
Okay, so you're not going to reveal in any way that we're broke.
Of course
that
not.
That we're having any problems at all.
Nope. Right. Nope. Just to reiterate, none of us is going to say anything that might indicate we are going broke.
Right, right. There is no way in hell that I am going to say that we're broke.
Oh, I'm really worried I'm going to say it.
No, Michael.
No, man. You're fine.
We have to come from a position
of strength. I'm good. Yeah. Yep. Just put it on your mind.
It is. I'm good.
I like what this episode is doing because it's kind of setting up that Michael's going to blow this, and he totally doesn't. So they come in to the negotiation room. I'm going to say it like that. Negotiation room.
Dun, dun.
And is that the Law and Order sound?
Yeah.
And so they enter. Michael says, I don't want to hear your first offer. Tell me your second offer, which is $12,000. It's like, nothing, especially split three ways for a business, right? And David's like, I know you can't be making money. I know the business. You've got to be hurting. And this is where we see Michael. He kind of goes down the same path as he did with Dwight's client about Dunder Mifflin not being in good shape. And I love it. He says, let me take your situation and raise you a situation.
Your company is losing clients left and right. You have a stockholder meeting coming up, and you're going to have to explain to them why your most profitable branch is bleeding. So they may be looking for a little change in the CFO. So I don't think I need to wait out Dunder Mifflin. I think I just have to wait out you.
It is awesome. Like, I want to, like, fist pump Michael. You know, it's like, good job, buddy. You've really shown him what you want to do.
Yeah, it makes everyone in the audience watching this feel so good, because it is. It's like Michael is using to his advantage the insider information that he knows because of this meeting coming up. Like, nobody else would have known that this meeting is coming up, but he knows because he was in management. And so he's aware of when these things happen. And I don't know about you, but like watching this maybe for the first time, or like, you know, just trying to watch it analytically now, when David says what he says, you're like, oh no, like they're crushed. Like, mm-hmm. he knows, he states how much he knows the paper business, how much he knows that they can't be operating in the black. It's like, oh, David knows. He doesn't know, but he does know. He's aware of kind of the state of things of the Michael Scott Paper Company. But then the way Michael comes back and not makes it about a company. David was making it about the company. Michael turned it around and made it about David. He made it about, like, David Wallace and his job. And he pointed that out. It wasn't about Dunder Mifflin. It was about David Wallace and his job. And that's when you saw that David Wallace was feeling a little bit of that sweat riding down his temple. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, ooh, he's right. Because what's in danger here? It's not Dunder Mifflin. it's David Wallace who's going to be held responsible. And so it's going to be his individual job to kind of shut this down and quiet it up so he doesn't look like the failure.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
It is good. We end up with David offering $60,000. He'll need board approval. And that is pretty exciting to Michael Scott Paper Company, right? Like $60,000, assume you split it three ways. That's a lot of money.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
$60,000.
We are so rich.
Especially for a business that's getting ready to go out of business.
Yeah.
As they're talking, so Charles and David leave the room. They're talking. And as Michael Scott Paper Company is meeting, Dwight finds this information out that, oh, they are going out of business, because we saw it earlier, but Michael's been calling clients saying, hey, we actually need to charge you more, a lot more for the paper we already dropped off. So Dwight hears about this. He takes it to Charles. Jim like chases him in there. And this is where Charles kind of puts Dwight in his place and says, look, you've embarrassed me. Jim is trying to throw Dwight off track by talking about like how many cases have you cracked, and Dwight goes down a whole rabbit hole, which is fantastic.
Great work, Dwight.
Quiet, you.
No, I mean great detective work, because this must be the first case you've ever cracked, right?
You don't crack a case. That has a pejorative connotation. It's like calling a policeman a cop. You solve a case, and yes, I've solved plenty.
So how long can they stay viable?
What are your top five cases?
I'm gonna answer Charles first.
Because you've solved zero cases.
Okay. One case of the beat bandit. Missing beats from all over the farm. No footprints. Inside job. Moe's in socks. Boom. Case closed.
Okay. Do not go anywhere near the conference room.
Done.
Because you have embarrassed me for the last time today. Got it?
I'm not following you.
You two are morons.
Got it.
Get out.
And in that, Charles allows the proceedings to move forward, you know, and I think his reasons for that are self-preservation. Like, he doesn't want Dwight like take him down, and he knows if he continues to align himself with Dwight, I think that's going to continue to reflect poorly on him.
When the meeting returns and Charles and David go back in, where we think Michael is about to accept the offer, but he kind of throws this curveball and rejects it. And again, they get sent out of the room, because now Pam and Ryan are like, wait, I thought we were just about to accept it. And Michael again comes back with those moments of clarity, like, look, that money is nice, but jobs are better.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what he realized. And I think they kind of all realized that, like, they made this bold move. But yeah, getting their jobs back would kind of be the best move here, because there's no other chance for that to really happen. And that's what they counter with, is that they want their jobs back. And as David Wallace points out, which I love that he is just absolutely floored by this request, and he's like, you're talking about a multi-million-dollar buyout.
Do you realize what you're asking for here? You're talking about salary plus health benefits
and dental this time,
insurance, taxes, social security for three people. This is a heck of a lot more than $60,000. You're talking about a multi-million-dollar buyout.
These are our demands.
And I also really love in this moment how Michael stands up for Pam and wants her back as sales, that mm-hmm. she is in sales. He doesn't say anything about where Ryan's going to go, just that he needs a job.
Yeah.
But he specifically points out that he wants Pam in sales.
Mm-hmm. And the inclusion of Ryan really sets David off. He's like, he cost the company hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're not doing this. And Michael has this great quote. I wrote it down. I don't care if Ryan murdered his whole family. He is like a son to me.
I didn't really think that through until you just said
it. It's really funny. And David points out, this is a multi-million dollar deal. Like, you're talking about salaries, social security, taxes, health insurance, all of that stuff. And Michael's like, yeah, that's what we want. It's up to you. He says, our balls are in your court. This is what he has laid out. And Michael has built a case for himself and his company and his team in a way that, like, I mean, we've talked about this before. We love when we see, like, business Mike come out. Like, he really just puts them in this corner. It's fantastic.
And he does have this moment where, I don't know about you, but, like, as the audience watching, you panic a little bit for him, and you think he's about to tank this whole deal that is kind of balancing on the head of a pin right now. And he says, my company is worth nothing.
Your company cannot be worth that much.
Our company is worth nothing. That's the difference between you and I. Business isn't about money to me, David. If tomorrow my company goes under, I will just start another paper company, and then another, and another, and another. I have no shortage of company names.
Michael.
That's one of them.
It's like, oh no, you said it. But he then follows up with, I'm just going to keep taking your business away. Like, he's like, I'm not a big corporation, is essentially what he's saying, in that he doesn't need to answer to shareholders. He doesn't need to have a ton of overhead. He can technically continue starting, you know, tiny companies and eat away at this little bit of business. So there's really no end to this in sight. And that's what he's pointing out. And I think that that is the tipping point for David. And he's like, all right. It's better to have him playing on our team than playing against us.
Yeah.
I think that that's a really important thing too, is that David sees the value in Michael in this moment. He sees his skills. And before, it was just kind of this, I don't know, this magic that he thinks, like, I don't know why this branch is the most profitable. It just is. He even has him in for a meeting, and that meeting goes nowhere. It's like no one could really pinpoint or see why Michael was actually doing well. And I think maybe this moment for David Wallace was a glimpse into, whoa, this is what this guy is doing. You know, we don't see David Wallace in any of the successful sales pitches that Michael has been at. This is the moment where he proves himself to David. And I think that that is a really big, wonderful step in their business relationship together. And that I feel like maybe David will go forward and trust Michael a little more. And in that, we see that one of his demands, being that Charles needs to go, is actually met. And that's a big, big turning point.
Yeah, I thought a lot about that, because he does leave at the end of the episode, and we don't see Charles again. And in the negotiation, David said, no, like, I'm not firing Charles. So my assumption is does he just go back to corporate and we just never see him again? Like, I just don't know where that actually ends up.
I have a feeling that he got put in charge of, like, a different part of the branches or something like that, that something changes, because we no longer, I'm trying to think going forward, who ends up becoming, like, the next level management up? Who's the Jan? Like, where did the Jan job go? Because that's essentially who Charles is supposed to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we see David Wallace a lot, and so I'm not quite sure.
Maybe honestly, he just took over handling the most profitable branch because it's the most difficult and weird.
Yeah.
He's just like, I'll just do that myself. Mm-hmm. But I do like how Charles leaves, and that he is about to say something to the workroom, and Michael cuts him off exactly the way that Charles cut off Michael when Michael was leaving.
I love it.
Hey, guys.
No, you're done.
Such sweet satisfaction. And then we get that wonderful artistic tableau of Michael putting his leg up on Jim's desk and Jim kind of pointing at him like, that's the guy. And I think everyone is seeing Michael in a more capable light at the end of this episode. I think everyone is a little bit impressed. I think everyone's a little bit more willing to follow his leadership at this point. And it's pretty great to see.
It really is. Like I said, I love this episode. I love what we see out of Michael. I also really like episodes with David Wallace. It's just, this is one of my favorites.
I mean, this was a very, like, clean episode, but it was chock full of so much. I love these transition episodes, but we'll be back next time talking about the episode Casual Friday, and we will see Michael, Pam, and Ryan back at Dunder Mifflin proper.
Yep, it's gonna be fun.
It is gonna be fun. You got those cheese balls I sent, right?
Yes, yeah. So just tell the audience that I got a huge Amazon box. I was like, what is this? And I opened it, and you had sent me some cheese puffs, and they're slowly being eaten by people in my house.
That's awesome. Enjoy. Mm-hmm. Live the dream. Live the Michael Scott Paper Company dream. I'll see you next time. Casual Friday. Make sure, dress casual.
I will.